Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome everybody to the show, it's real talk. Panel full of open minds, giving you real thoughts. You always gonna get the realest. Beyond the title to opinions, don't get in your feelings. The further assassin, breaking it down, we bring on the next verse. Scroll through our history, here's some of our experts. May of 2013 marks the beginning. Passion and dedication, that was the engine. Shouts to Grip for producing the track. Pissing the recipe, and he came up with crack. Back to this real talk, you should really check us out. Providing voices for the people, this is what we about. Bringing skilled and talented guests on from different places. Hello, welcome, different views, different races. Hit the top, this intrigue we doing it. It's real talk radio, the best ones doing it. Instead of pick people's interest, going deep, got people's faces frowning like incest. Can't rock out with a shoe, got a thin chest. We make our name hold weight, that's the bench press. If you're an up and comer, this is where to be. You're gonna get a good look, that's a guarantee. That's just what we desire on. So if you think you're seriously funny, then you can ride along. Been podcasting for years with some veterans. It's one of those days we could be a medicine. Listen's got choices, it's all on them. Either check the store online or you can call on them. Doesn't matter your political views, you can call it how you see it. Say whatever you choose, there's no censor. It's all good when you rock with us. When they hear real talk, come chop it up. Conspiracy theories, Barbie, superstorms, online dating, that's the top that's really yours. Why men cheat? Why women better at it? Why you blacks gotta witness so many foolish tragedies? Why you 30 still making twerk videos? Why narcissists victimizing want pity though? These are things that we all wanna know. But you're at the right place cause we addressed it on the show. Models, actors, authors, rappers, singers, producers, atheists, pastors, shouts to supporters, helping us grow faster. It's all love, we embrace fellow podcasters. Sports, dating, family, politics. Other shows so they dig us but won't acknowledge it. If we come together, we can make a union. It's Real Talk Radio. Tune in.
What's good, everybody? Welcome to It's Real Talk Radio with your boy Tay Rail and the homie Bobby G. Where you at, Bobby?
Hey, I'm right here, Tay. What's up, everybody? Welcome to Real Talk Radio.
Yes, sir. Hey. We here. We are in the building. Back with another one. DJ Khaled voice, you know, celebrating Black excellence. Celebrating Black excellence, you know. Once again, we keeping the train moving, you know. This will be our second celebrating Black excellence show. The last one was my little cousin Kendra Griffin, and now tonight we have my other little cousin Deja Griffin. You know, and, man, we got a lot to talk about. We got so many questions and a lot to get into. It's going to be another classic one, Bobby. You know what I mean?
Well, you already know, man. It's always good to use a platform to uplift and talk about the positive things that we do as Black people. Because, you know, the media love to, spew nothing but the negative about Blacks any chance they get. So now we have, it's our opportunity to, share positive things that us as Black people are doing as well out here. So.
Yes, sir. So who want to do it? You want to do it? You want to read it? Or you want me to do it?
Oh, sure. I got it. I'm fine. You ain't know. No problem. I can do this. All right. Send it set. Okay. All right. Tonight on It's Real Talk Radio, we will be joined by special guest Deja Grissom as we continue our display of Black excellence. Deja is a 19-year-old freshman in college who is continuing her journey to success. Deja is the little sister of our previous guest, Kendra Grissom, who we had on a discussion back in on May 15th, 2020. You know, it's an honor to have another young Black woman join us for a discussion as we acknowledge the will and determination in Black excellence. Deja shows great promise, like a lot of other young Black men and women, but it doesn't get the recognition it deserves because the media and entertainment industries love to show the ignorant side of Black people, but not the, you know, perseverance. If you aren't dribbling a basketball, catching a football on the big screen, or doing something that the powers that be can't capitalize from, you know, basically this is, you know, the narrative, you know, this is a narrative that has to change. And with every discussion we have with Black people, you know, who are looking to make a positive impact, we're going to help chip away at it. Born a native of Baltimore City, Deja could have easily followed the crowd, went down a dark road, and became, you know, another statistic. But she refused to allow that to happen. You know, with the guidance of a pair of great parents who would not allow their children to get caught up in the madness, you know, Deja persevered, you know. She persevered and is now on her way to earning her college degree, as both her big sisters have obtained. You know, her big sister Kendra has earned a bachelor's degree in African American studies, and her older sister, Tiara, has a degree in accounting. Majoring in English, Deja has big goals to become an author, producer, and screenwriter. She also plans to work for a Black-owned magazine. Tonight, we will be discussing what life is like growing up in the Baltimore, you know, issues within the Black community, politics, COVID-19, Black history, her career choice of screenwriting, and womanism. It's about to get real. All right, Tay, let's do this. You ready?
Yes, sir. So without further ado, let's get our guest on. Deja, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Oh, man, splendid.
Good to hear.
Right.
Is this your first podcast, Deja?
It is. It is.
Okay. Good. I'm glad that, you know, we could be your first interview.
I'm glad too. I feel very excited and very comfortable already. So
that's good. Glad you can feel. I'll tell you, you can be yourself here.
Feel comfortable. Be yourself. Yeah. Let your hair down. Take your shoes off and all that.
Yep. By all means. Yep. We got so much to get into, man. First thing. Want to ask you? Look, I kind of know, but you know, because I'm from Baltimore myself. But you know, I'm from an older generation. You know what I mean? They need to hear it from you, the people that have never been to Baltimore, that only know about what they hear from TV or watching the wire and stuff like that. So for you, what was life like growing up in Baltimore?
My life in Baltimore was actually great. I didn't move from Baltimore until I was 10 years old, but I attended a school called the Empowerment Academy, and it was just full of wonderful role models and mentors and everyone was like a family because we had less than 216 students, and everyone knew everyone. I remember having teachers who taught me how to, like, make my own clothes, make my own jewelry. I had another teacher named Ms. Hunt. She was the music teacher, and, like, she would encourage us to go forward and just to be proud of who we are as African Americans, and all because that we were Black children in the city did not mean that we couldn't be successful, that we couldn't succeed. So I had a wonderful childhood there. And also in my church community, there were positive role models. You know, I had pastors, saw pastors that were lawyers, really educated and really just around smart people who really loved me. And I wasn't ashamed of my Blackness because they encouraged me to be Black, and they encouraged me to embrace who I was.
Awesome. That is great. So you've been around positive people in the church and positive people in at home. So this leads me to the next question, though. What made you decide to choose English as your major?
Well, I have always loved books. I've always loved reading. I wrote my first book when I was like 6. I was really inspired by like the books my teacher would read us. But one thing I noticed, it was that, well, as I got older, I noticed a lot of books that I read at school did have a lot of white children in them. And that's not something I necessarily want to do. So I wanted to write stories from the perspective of Black children, uplift Black children. And one of the books that really inspired me to really go that route, well, actually, author that inspired me to go that route was Sharon Draper. The first book I read by Sharon Draper, I think it was Forged by Fire, I think. And it was just a wonderful book, and I really liked it. And she majored in English, and she was a school teacher for 25 years. And then one day she submitted her short story to Jet Magazine, I believe, and she started her writing career from there. So she was a major inspiration for me.
So one second. You wrote your first book at 6 years old?
Yes.
That is unbelievable. What book, what 6 year old is that? I mean, that's just nothing but Black history. I gotta applaud that. I gotta clap. That is amazing. You know, 6 years old and you're writing a book that reflects Blacks because you've been seeing whites in a lot of these books, these children's books.
I got you, Bobby. Right. We got the effect.
Oh, there you go. Yeah, there's an effect. Right.
Thank
there.
You.
Right. That's the standing ovation effect. There you go. All right.
That's dope, Deja. So you're in community college right now, correct? You go to a community college, right?
Yes.
Right. And you're planning on transferring to a university, right?
Yes, I'm planning.
Not
I'm
transferring,
currently...
but going from your community college, you plan on pursuing your bachelor's, correct?
Yes, I am.
And the school you plan on attending an HBCU?
Yes, I'm planning on attending Hampton University, which is in Virginia. It's right on Virginia Beach, actually. It's a very nice school, very pleasant people. And I knew I wanted to go to Hampton it was a competition between Hampton and Howard since, like, 8th grade. But I dropped Howard to go to Hampton, and I'm looking forward to doing that.
Amazing.
So any particular reason why you decided to go with Hampton over Howard?
Well, I actually got a chance to be on Hampton's campus, and I actually got to meet people from Hampton, and we just had a connection and a bond, a very strong connection, a bond when I met them. And then when I went on campus, it just felt like home. So
just felt at home. I hear that.
That's it.
Hey. And it's in a nice area. You know, Virginia Beach, Hampton is in a nice area. That's awesome. So how inspiring is it to have two sisters with college degrees?
It's very inspiring, actually, because my older sister, well, Tierra is 15 years older than me, and every year she went to Morgan State, and every year we would actually go to homecoming with her since I was like a little kid. And it was just inspiring to see all the Black excellence, all these educated Black people on campus having fun. And then when Kendra went to Spelman, I saw the same thing in that dynamic, just seeing an all-Black female school that was just doing some great things. So that inspired me most definitely. But I think I always knew I wanted to go to an HBCU, like since I was little.
Awesome. Is Spelman the school that sitcom they used back in the 90s?
A Different World? Yes.
Different World, did record on
Spelman's campus.
They filmed on Spelman campus. Okay. Mm-hmm. Right. That's awesome. What does being a screenwriter consist of?
Well, for me, I write a lot of plays, and okay, so it's a whole process on how I evolved into a screenwriter, because I just wanted to be an author and, you know, maybe like become a teacher and like publish books on the side. But for me, the more I wrote, the more I started seeing my stories in my books as actual, they used to play out in actual scenes in my head. So that's when I started kind of doing the screenwriting. The first play I've written was in 2016. It's called The Love Song in Harlem. And I actually got the idea for that play in a dream. So when I got up, I immediately just wrote down what I dreamt about. And that's where that started. So, like, screenwriters, you just really write for TV and movies and things like that. But I'm really excited about A Love Song in Harlem because in my mind, well, I can tell you what it's about. So basically it's set in 1923, Harlem, New York, and it's about a girl named Eleanor, well, a young Black woman named Eleanor, and about a young trumpet player named Benjamin who falls in love. But Eleanor is a part of the church, and that kind of division in that relationship in between her desire from going to be a gospel singer to become a jazz singer, and how she almost used her music to defy like gender roles and like patriarchy within society. But I really intended that to be just like a Broadway play, but I decided I wanted to change it into like an actual movie. I think that would be better. So that's, did that really answer the question? I don't know, but.
No, that definitely answers the question.
That's dope. And see, Bobby, skipped my question. That's why it seems so random. See, I was going to ask you, when did you know that you wanted to pursue a career as an author, producer, and screenwriter? And that was going to lead to that question, so it seemed kind of random.
Because
you know, we're different. Bobby's in New York. I'm in D-more. We you know, kind of reading off the screen. You know what I mean? And
Right. Yeah,
it just kind of accidentally skipped over my question. That's why it seems so random. But it's all good. But when did you feel like you knew, like, I want to be an author. I want to be a producer. I want to be a screenwriter. Like, when did it just hit you, like, these are my callings. I want to do these things. Like, you just knew it.
Well, see, when did it hit me? That's a good question. Because I moved from Baltimore to Baltimore County to Howard County. And, like, a lot of the comments and, like, the heat and the disregard to the Black experience within where I live now, which is Hopewell, particularly in my high school, really made me that there was a need for people to understand the Black experience. So I was like, hey, I have these books, these stories that I can really convert into screen. show on screen because I feel like reading is a lost art, and I feel like that would be more impactful. But also, I just felt like I wasn't living up to my God-given potential because I had books upon books, notebooks full of stories. I have notebooks full of songs, and I just felt like God was really telling me, like, I would be doing a disservice if I didn't share my ideas or my stories with the world. So I guess that's what stemmed that. So maybe I would say about 4 years ago, that's when I really dived deep into my craft.
Okay.
That's awesome.
I hear that.
That's awesome.
And so, I had the pleasure of reading some of the articles that you wrote for your school
mm-hmm.
paper, right? Like, you write articles for your school paper,
yes.
right?
Yes.
And I wanted to ask you, how did you get involved with writing articles for your school paper, and what has that experience been like for you?
Well, I first did, well, it goes back to my photography project. I did a project on Devin Allen, who took photos during the 2015 Baltimore riots. And we all know that, well, if you don't know, Freddie Gray was a native of a neighborhood in Baltimore called Sandtown. And I took photos inspired by Devin Allen, so I went to Sandtown. You know, I took images in Upton neighborhood and, like, the Drew Heights area neighborhood. And I began to do research on Sandtown and looking how, like, urban decay had impacted this area, and seeing like the causes behind the riots is not Freddie Gray's death was the tip of the iceberg and not just the main reason why they were rioting. Seeing that, you know, they are in basically an economic depression. Seeing that, you know, when you had 70% to 80% of a population in Sandtown working for like the steel industry or the lumber industry, and then you see the rise of Reaganomics and how all of the industries that they were working for essentially left Baltimore to go overseas to get cheaper labor, and seeing how that impacted how Sandtown became, and also recognizing that my dad grew up there and seeing that transition. But I really wanted to become a journalist to shed light on these issues, because that's something the media doesn't do. They always show you the surface level of stuff, but they never dive deep the issues. So the first article that I wrote was about voter suppression, and I was inspired by the students of Prairie View A&M, which is like the second largest HBCU in Texas, who was fighting against voter suppression. That school has been fighting against voter suppression since like 1971, where the state was saying, okay, well, if you're in Prairie View and you're a Prairie View student, you can't vote if your family doesn't own land or doesn't own property. And they're currently having a lawsuit that's being supported by the NAACP against Waller County. And just looking at how these issues are just impacting so many people in so many ways. So that's what really inspired me to become a journalist. And work for the HBC Times, so.
That's really
awesome.
Dope. And so.
That is amazing.
I'm gonna put
yeah.
you. I'm gonna put you on the spot a little bit, real quick, okay? I'm gonna put
mm-hmm.
you on the spot a little bit, real quick.
Okay.
Now, what I was wondering is if you would be willing to read a few paragraphs of like one of your articles, so the listeners. The people around the world who are tuning in can hear what hear your talent.
Okay.
Do you have anything
will...
that you could pull up that you could read just
yeah.
to, you know, you gotta read the whole thing, but maybe like a few paragraphs just to give a taste of, you know what I mean, what you do, your talent, what you bring to the
mm-hmm.
table. You know what I mean?
Okay. I will do that. Now, which article do you want me to read? I have
Oh, which it's your choice. It's your world right now. Whatever you want. Your favorite, you pick.
So let's see.
I should have warned you I was going to do this, so you could have been prepared. That's one thing I forgot to tell you. I did forget
okay.
to tell you that. I ain't going to lie.
It's okay, Dante. So this article, I wrote this on, let's see, it got published November 18th. It's called White Backlash, A Response to Racial Progress. White supremacy in America is a major issue. All Lives Matter and Stop the Count are chants cried by Donald Trump supporters all around the country. These people are angry about the outcome of the 2020 presidential election and are willing to incite fear to maintain their power. In recent news, Philadelphia police arrested QAnon supporters for trying to attack a voting center. This is one of the many violent scenes that erupted during the election, not to mention the numerous threats to the lives of politicians and activists of all kinds. This same hatred influenced white supremacist Caitlin Pye. She was inspired by Dylann Roof, who killed 9 African Americans at the historic Emmanuel AME Church, citing he would love to start a race riot. Last November, she planned to attack Bethel AME Church. According to Nick Watson, a crime reporter at the Gainesville Times, the teen planned to attack churchgoers and arrived at the church twice, but on those days, Bible study was canceled. Pye's notebook was discovered by her classmates, which had a detailed account of her actions. Her backpack had T-shirts with white supremacy slogans and one that said, "Free Dylann Roof." The students notified the teachers, and the school launched an investigation. The investigation was turned over to local police. On October 23rd, Pye was sentenced to 4 years in the Regional Youth Detention Center, where she will receive counseling. Then she will serve 10 years probation. Pye was ordered to stay away from any AME church in Georgia and must stay 150 feet away from AME church. According to the Times, Pye is remorseful about her actions, and she said she is truly sorry for what she has done. Church leaders have forgiven her, but many are outraged that she will not be charged as an adult. Do you want me to keep on reading?
This is a great article. You sure can. You sure can.
You can if you want.
Okay. Let me just read the rest.
You're good.
Gabrielle Conjeto, a freshman at HCC, says, "Yes, I think this punishment was appropriate because she is still a child and likely influenced by Dylann Roof. She had an intention to kill in church, so she definitely deserved to be punished." According to Natasha Chen and Holly Yang, correspondents for CNN News, 4 states do not have hate crime laws. Georgia is one of these states. Bishop Reginald Jackson of the 6th Episcopal District of African American Methodist Episcopal Church said, it ought to bother us that in the state of Georgia, this young woman cannot be charged with a hate crime. And most leaders believe she should be tried as an adult. The Georgia Legislative Black Caucus is currently working on plans to make a bill on hate crime. When hearing this news, Conjeto was deeply disheartened, saying, "Every state needs to have hate crime laws. It may help stop the attacks against people of color." Terrell Bratcher, a professor of African American Studies and leader of Howard Pride at HCC, said, "This is more of a reason why there needs to be a hate crime laws at federal level. When you discuss state laws, each state is different. Some states and different jurisdictions are stricter than others. And when you do not have a federal or national standard, you are going to have inequities. But it does not mean justice will not serve in this particular case. Days after Caitlin Pye's trial, Willie Brown Jr. was found lynched from a basketball rim in Sacramento, California. And days later, Walter Wallace Jr. was shot and killed by police in Philadelphia. Even months after George Floyd's death, several black men have been found lynched throughout the nation. This happened after the results of the presidential election, which made Kamala Harris the first woman and person of color to be elected as vice president. The election of 127 women of color to Congress and the unprecedented participation of first-time voters. To most Americans, the 2020 uprising played a crucial role in President-elect Biden's win. According to Brexiteer, I am one to believe that without the 2020 uprisings, Joe Biden would not have won. I think there is a distinct argument that can be made that these uprisings, media was covering it like it was just chaos everywhere. But if you went to a Black Lives Matter protest, one of the things they did was place a heavy emphasis on voter registration. And so when you look back at the counties that won this election were areas that had large 2020 uprisings. He continues to describe the current situation of racial progress. I do not think the work is not done, meaning it's really easy for us to look at the gains that were made and say, all right, let's take a step back. But we must hold the administration accountable. Joe Biden should know that the only reason he occupies that office is because people of color. The sentiment is very true. We are making progress regarding diversity and inclusion in predominantly white establishments and having people of color in powerful elected positions. However, we must address deep-seated racism that caused groups like QAnon to rise to power and understand how laws work to protect white privilege and discard black lives. It is time we focus on making America a place that everyone can be free. All right, that's the end of the day.
I think we need to applaud again. I think we need that.
Yes, that was indeed an article
that you wrote for your school newspaper.
Yes, sir.
That was amazing. You were so engaging. I was totally listening. I was engaged. It was very interesting. And you brought up a lot of good stuff that was going on in the world with President-elect Biden. With the stuff that's going on with the police brutality and everything, like, I was just sitting there listening, like, wow. I felt like I was like a newspaper was just being read to me, a newspaper article was being read to me by some type of digital device or something, you know? Yeah, and you're very educated. You're very educated. You know, I'm listening to you. You know, I have a friend that speaks, words that we don't normally use, you know what I mean? But you're very educated, man. Very educated
young lady.
Yes. And anyway, so, and this leads me to the next question. What do you see your role being at a magazine company?
Well, for me, I would like to just talk from the perspective of a younger black woman in these particular magazines like Ebony, Essence, and Jet. I mean, there are geared towards black women, but I don't know if I would just like to be a fresh voice, a fresh perspective in these areas and in these certain places. That's what my goal would to be. Because I would like to own my own magazine, particularly for younger black audiences, because I feel like a lot of things in the black community, I feel like there are certain things that aren't always age appropriate for certain viewers. So I would like to work at one of those magazines and get my own experience and then branch out and create Brown Beauty, which is what would be a magazine for black teens and tweens, something for like a younger demographic. But I would definitely want to learn at a place like Ebony, Essence, or Jet. I think that would be really cool.
Awesome. That is so awesome. Okay, so what are your thoughts on the current president? I've got to ask this question.
The orange one?
Yes. The orange
Whoa.
Yes, the orange one.
Donald. Well, let's see. I feel Donald Trump. I mean, if we're really going to talk about it, we have to go back to, like, 2008 and even talk about how he even rose to power. I know you guys, because I was a little kid at this time when Barack Obama ran for office, but I know you guys will remember, like, that John McCain and Obama being, like, the two major candidates. And one
yes.
of the things that the Republican Party did was push, like, race-baiting politics. So they pushed up the fact that Barack Obama was a black man. They even accused him of being a Muslim and called him a terrorist. And because of things like white privilege, white fragility, and because of the ingrained racism that is in our society, that's one of the main reasons why we had someone like Donald Trump run for office, because John McCain decided not to play up the racial issues. And you could see on videos of his campaign when they were saying Barack Obama was this, he's a terrorist, John McCain would refute that. And many whites did not like that, and that led to John McCain losing the election. And then you have the rise of Obama, and this is where voter suppression comes in, because the Republican, there was, I think, at one point, a mostly Republican Senate, and you had a Democratic president. So what the Republican Senate did, they would use a lot of voter suppression tactics, and essentially what they did was the Republicans gained the power of Senate, and because they used voter suppression, not everyone's voices was heard, and so when Barack Obama would try to pass laws or do different things, they would veto a lot of bills, almost making him a lame duck president in his, like, second presidency. So then you have Obama here on the spectrum that is too radical or a leftist or too progressive for your conservatives, and then he's too moderate for your liberals. And Donald Trump is watching this, and he uses race-baiting politics in order to get in office. And I feel like this really speaks to the issues within America. If you have someone like Donald Trump rise to power who is just uneducated, misogynistic, very immoral man, and even still you have his supporters that follow him blindly, I call them sheeple, who just believe everything he says. So I feel like Donald Trump is a joke of a president, and he is a disgrace to America in one way, but then in another way, I feel like a lot of the racist history and the just hatefulness and bitterness within this country is why we had someone like Donald Trump be president.
That's a fact. That is totally a fact. I agree with you. I'm on you 100%. And so, with that being said, what are your thoughts on Joe Biden?
Well, I think Joe Biden is, first of all, I think he is a good, he's a very good person. And I say that because when you watch him on a debate, he really is very sympathetic to the American people and really talks from his heart, as the other one, the orange one, just rambles and make incoherent sentences. And so I feel like Joe Biden speaks to the true American values that we have in seeing someone who is really compassionate, who is really loving and caring, taking office. So I'm excited about his presidency. I was actually able to vote for the first time this year. So I was excited of voting and actually seeing my candidate win. So
amazing. That is great.
Exactly. And speaking of that, Deja, I want to ask you, how does it feel having a black woman as Vice President of the United States? First time in history. First time a woman at all, and it's a black woman. How does that feel?
It makes me so excited. It makes me think about women like Shirley Chisholm, who first ran for president, who was back in the 70s or 80s, who didn't
yeah.
get as much support. Because she was a woman, because she was black, it makes me think about Charlotta Bass, who was like one of the first black women to work in an administration. I forget what administration it was. It was like back in the day. Oh,
they voted for Ronald Reagan.
Yes.
They voted for Ronald Reagan, but I voted for Shirley Chisholm back then, black
woman.
Right.
Right. So it makes me feel so good that she is in office, and it makes me feel like I can do anything. Almost the same feeling that I had when I watched Barack Obama be inaugurated. Like, I wanted to be his presidency, made me want to run for president, and then I changed my mind, and then I thought I was going to want to be on the Supreme Court. But that's not my calling, so.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. Awesome. Okay. Could you be close friends with a Trump supporter?
Well, see, could I be a close friend with a Trump supporter? Well, as a Christian and trying to be Christ-like, I could be civil with them. It depends on, I would say yes and no. I think I could be their friend.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah. I think I could be their friend and I can coexist with them, but I don't. One thing that I wouldn't want to have to do is to assimilate around someone else who has a different ideology than me. Because if I can't be myself around you, then you shouldn't be my friend. Just simple as
that. There you
go.
You got two different ideologies. It's tough to really coexist with somebody like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's tough.
Imagine you out with your friend and they got the MAGA hat, Make America Great Again. They got a Trump shirt on and all that, and y'all out together. And you just over there, you know, just on your black and proud vibe, and they all over there on that MAGA
right.
on that MAGA vibe, and it's just like Bloods and Crips. Like, how does that?
Right. But one thing that Malcolm X actually did, he actually sat down with leaders of the Ku Klux Klan and talked about how we could achieve kind of like equality without having so many clashes in between blacks and whites. So I do think in that instance, it would be a great way to have a dialogue with someone who agrees differently than me. But I think it would be a good way to educate myself on what they believe and try to see where they're coming from. But also in the same sense, I'm not going to be like really close with them. I'm going to just keep them at a distance.
Awesome.
Yeah, because then you guys start asking yourself, well, what is justifiable for this man's behavior and the bigotry and the racism and stuff?
Mm-hmm.
And then, like, if they're black, it's like, but you're black. Like, how do you, then if they're white, it's going to probably feel worse because it's like, well, you're white. And on top of that, you already have white privilege. And on top of that, you support a president who.
Mm-mm.
Is, you know, pretty much racist, you know?
Right.
And it's just like, nah, yeah. That's
mm-hmm.
that's a tough situation. I have some friends and associates who are Trump supporters, and it's those conversations are very – but see, we've been friends. Only reason why we're cool is because we go way back, way before Trump was thought of. I'm talking about back in the day when you was a little kid, like a toddler or something.
Right.
We go way, way back. And if it wasn't for that, like if I meet you right now – and you're a Trump supporter, and I'm meeting you for the first time, it's just no way that we're going to be able to create a real vibe because I'm just asking myself, how is it that you're able to, like, where is the justification? And that would just bother me so much.
Uh-huh.
We could have a conversation. We could talk about the football game, but, I mean, as far as, like, being buddies and hanging out, I just can't see it. Mm-mm. I can't see it.
That's definitely an issue. Especially when you bring up things of like intersectionality, how there are some like white Christians who support Donald Trump. You know, there are black Christians who don't support Donald Trump, and how that has caused a divide. Well, race has always been a divide, within the church, and I think it's very sad, but that's a whole that's a whole separate discussion.
Yeah,
it gets deep.
Yeah, you can have a whole discussion just on that alone. So we want to step away from politics, and I want to ask you. So when you hear the term Afrocentric, what does that do for you? What do you think of? Like, do you embrace that term? And if you do, like, what do you feel when you hear that term?
Yes, so I'm definitely very Afrocentric. I just think about people celebrating their African heritage, particularly African Americans celebrating their African heritage, understanding who they are, and trying to connect with the remnants of the culture that we have left from slavery. I think slavery has really just, like, damaged who we are as a people, and Afrocentricity is just trying to hold on to that. And it's a celebration of who we are as a people. And I think it's very beautiful for African Americans and just members who are of the diaspora to celebrate that.
Yeah, I totally agree. Mm-hmm. You gotta hold on to some of that. Because we live in, really, to be honest with you, in their world. You know,
right.
So we have to bring our little Afrocentricness from before slavery and try to hold on to some of that. So, you know, we live in right now in their world. It is what it is, you know, once they took over. So, yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah, no doubt, no doubt. And if you could pick three things the black community could improve on for the betterment of the entire community, what would they be?
Now you didn't set me up. three things offhand. Because, see, the whole...
It's probably so many things, but if you could pick three things, like three
of
the most important things...
If I could, I would want black people to build up Black Wall Street again. That's what I would want to happen. And I would also want us, well, the six three things, okay. The six three things, I would say maybe try to, three things? Maybe we would start by having conversations about the divides that are within our community. And how we almost have, like, I don't want to call it tribalism, but it's just basically divisions, and try to understand the different generations of the black experience, kind of like the old Negro versus the new Negro, and trying to understand, well, why does the older generation think this way, and why does the younger generation think this way? Because I think when we have conversations about race and particularly about police brutality, our assumptions of what the other one thinks can just be so off and be so warped, and it can be used as a way for the white man, the oppressor, to use that and to pin it against us. So I would try to push for more unity within a community. That's what I would try to do. So unity, I would try to maybe, like, improve schools in the black community and, like, try to end poverty if possible. That's what I would say.
That's awesome. That's
Great selections.
Yeah. Education is probably the most important, you know, that you can pick from a black community that can improve for the betterment of the, entire community. Because you got to educate ourselves, because, you know, a lot of us, you know, we live in places where we pay rent, but to a white man, and we're living in his building. But when we should be trying to learn how to own that building and rent it out to some other people, whoever it is, to your people, to make it affordable for your people to come and live, or if you're going to... No disrespect, but if you're gonna rent it out to white and they got money, charge them money. Charge them a certain percentage of what they make.
Right.
That's what they do. You know, so that's what they do. So, you know, we need to learn also about money. We need to learn about making your money work for you, putting it in the right mutual funds, and learn about dividends, learn about the market, stock market, learn about finances, because that's very important too.
I agree.
You know, these are things that we need to learn about so we can work smarter and not harder.
And another thing that I would want us to do, I saw this post, it was like 19 families in Georgia bought like 60 acres of land, and I would love it if like Black communities, like if we could just come together and just buy land and do something
that's
with that,
because
land is very profitable.
Definitely.
Right. That's one of the most, right, that's why it's an education, because real estate is very important, and land, that's all part of it. Owning buildings and owning the land under the building, because you can own a building. Well, if someone owns the land up under your building and they want it, they can get it,
right?
You know, from you. So if you own the land and the building, probably nobody can touch you.
Right.
You're good to
and
go. So that's true.
And you wouldn't have to fight against stuff like restrictive covenants, which was a form of racial discrimination against African-Americans.
Right.
Yes, that too. It played a part of that. You know, and that's why you see these urban cities with all these high populations of African Americans, because of something called white flight, because it was this lie that African Americans brought down property values, which was created by real estate developers and to really get to basically have white people live in suburbs and keep people poor, keep Black people poor,
keep
the
away
white
from the white
richer.
Right.
Right.
That's a way to keep Blacks away, right? Making it more expensive where you know they can't afford to live there. Exactly.
Right.
So, yeah. So these are things that, you know, our community definitely, like the young brothers out there that want to sit outside and smoke a blunt and holler at some young lady, need to be trying to study, learn about real estate, learn about buying land, learn about things like that, and need to get and share it with the other brothers on the block. That you, while y'all sitting there smoking that blunt, y'all should be talking about, yo, what can we do to own this building where we sitting in front of smoking a blunt, you know, or drinking, whatever, you know. So that's what we need to do, you know. So, yeah.
I agree.
Yeah, so... so how did growing up, going to church, help shape you into the young lady you are today? Growing up, you know, going to church and everything.
Well, see, I mean, it played a huge part in my identity and who I am, because now that I'm saved, I'm a born again Christian. Well, first of all, when I was Thank you.
Say born again Christian. That's awesome.
Thank you. It has been an eye-opening experience just knowing, because growing up I was bullied a lot, and that really impacted like my self-esteem and how I viewed myself. But I also did have a community of people, God placed a community of people around me that would build me up. And I'm in a place where I have many, many great mentors, and a lot of the relationship that I do have with my church is just so strong, because these are not just members of a church, of the same church that I attend. They're like my brothers, my sisters. They're like my second family. You know, I remember one Christmas, my mom didn't give us Christmas presents because we were being bad, and like, my pastor came with a whole bunch of Christmas presents for us. Like, he was like a father figure, grandfather, whatever you want to call him, to us. And so just seeing how much they love me and seeing how much they love God made me want to love God more. And I just been enjoying my relationship with Jesus. He's the one that really pushes me to do things, to try, to be different. When I wanted to really quit or wanted to give up, saying, you know, feeling like I couldn't be a successful writer or I couldn't do anything, God was like, I already gave you the blessing. I already gave you the keys to the car. Now just drive it. So it has been a wonderful experience, and I wouldn't trade it for the world.
Awesome, awesome. All right. So what character traits did you get from your mom, and what character traits did you get from your dad?
Well, let's see. My mom, I definitely got both of my parents' worst ethics. I think my dad is very dramatic in a good way. I mean, he's a preacher, so he has to have some type of antics. Okay.
Hey, you're the preacher's daughter.
Yes, sir. Ooh, child. And but I think I got my mom's really big heart. Like, she's always just giving, being compassionate, and just, she's just full of love. I have parents that are really just full of love. And so that's where I think I get some of my character traits from. And of course, I get
awesome.
My sense of humor from my mom. Like, everyone in my mom's family could be comedians, so I get it for her.
That's good.
Yeah.
You gotta laugh, man. You gotta laugh, especially with what's going on today. You have to enjoy yourself.
Yes, sir.
You know, it's so easy to be frustrated and mad every day, so you gotta laugh.
Mm-hmm.
Have to.
Yes.
It's important. Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. All right. Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah,
awesome.
So Deja, I want to ask you, how does it feel when you hear people say all lives matter, especially when you hear white people say it? How does that feel for you to hear that?
Well,
does that bother you?
It does. Do you want me to give it from the perspective of a Christian, or I can give you from both?
You can just be you. You can just be.
Give it from the Deja perspective.
Okay. So from in the general sense, I just feel this is about to sound very interesting. I just feel like it's stupid for people to say all lives matter, because in this context, because any other time all lives ain't matter. Our lives didn't matter when we was killing a bunch of innocent children war. Our lives didn't matter to the people in Flint who are still drinking dirty water. Our lives don't matter to criminals who are still being in jail, or people who have gotten the electric chair for crimes they didn't commit. Our lives matter didn't matter then. So why do our lives matter now? And if our lives matter, we wouldn't have to say Black Lives Matter.
Amen on
that's
that.
That's how I feel.
Yes, amen. Yeah. And things like Emmett Till.
I don't even know what more could you say than that? I mean, that kind of sums it up right there. That's,
right.
Okay.
Really cool. I couldn't have read it any better. I definitely agree.
Right.
Couldn't
agree
more.
It's just crazy, you know. Particularly looking at the level of violence just against people of color in general, just all across the globe, it doesn't make sense, particularly women of color. And I did a whole project on, like, women of color who are of Christian backgrounds and how they have something called triple vulnerability because they are poor, they're people of color, women of color, and because of their faith. And you just see this crazy amount of women that are being human trafficked, going through forcible conversions, all types of craziness. And so a lot of people say, well, if Black lives really matter, what about, like, unborn babies, black-on-black crime and things like that? But if all Black lives matter and if all people really matter in a sense, we wouldn't be having this increase of violence throughout the war against women and just against people in general. Like, it's annoying to me. It really is.
Mm-hmm. It is. It's very annoying.
Definitely is.
Yeah, totally.
Definitely
yeah,
is.
Definitely.
Especially like when I hear a white person say it, it's like, how dare you, as a white person, a white privileged person,
right?
As a colonizer, to come around to say that to a black person. You know what I mean?
Right.
Considering what your people did to our people, for you to say that. That's like,
yeah,
that's racially insensitive.
Right.
It's racially insensitive. It really is.
Yeah,
this
is why.
It's ridiculous.
Right? Yeah.
Absolutely ridiculous.
Mm-hmm. It is.
Yeah. Go ahead, Deja.
Huh?
You going to say something?
That's like saying
something?
Forget
oh, yeah.
history. Forget about the oppression, slavery, and everything
mm-hmm.
that we did to put you in right now. Get over it. So
right.
well. Police.
That's what it is like.
Kill you and
mm-hmm.
abuse you and all of that stuff. So what? What
right.
do you do? Just be happy you're here in America. You know what
right.
I mean?
Yeah.
That's how they do.
I say, like, you know, when I say white people should be ashamed of themselves, it's like it seems to go through one end and come out the other. Like they really don't look at their history and they're not ashamed of themselves. They don't give a crap. Because the bottom line is power and control over everybody. That's their
right.
mentality. They just want to run everything, and they want to stay
mm-hmm.
the forces or the powers that be. That's it. That's
right.
the bottom line. They don't care about anything else. So even if you say, man, you guys should be ashamed of yourself, they don't care about that. They really don't. They just don't care. It doesn't matter. They're not thinking about that.
Right.
So this to me is just like, that's just the way they are. They do. That's
mm-hmm.
just life. Yeah. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Insensitive
you know.
People. Yeah. They couldn't care less.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So Deja.
So.
Mm-hmm.
Do you feel black excellence is being overshadowed by ignorance? Like when you look at how black people are viewed in the media. And pretty much, you know, we see the stereotypes and stuff that goes on, especially
mm-hmm.
on television and stuff like that.
Right.
Even online, the things that's being posted and all of that
right.
stuff. Like,
mm-hmm.
do you feel like black excellence, the people that are doing well for themselves, the people, college graduates and
mm-hmm.
achieving high ranks and becoming CEOs and you know, we had a black president, and now we have
right.
a black female vice president seem to be.
Right.
You know, you see
uh-huh.
all this black excellence happening, but yet when you see black people being talked about publicly,
mm-hmm.
it's usually about
in a negative connotation.
Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So you feel like black excellence is being overshadowed mm-hmm. by ignorance?
Yes, to a certain degree, I feel like. That's why social media platforms are a very tricky thing to navigate because you have pages like Because of Them We Can that highlights black excellence throughout the generations and, you know, Hollywood Rick, who's like a black photographer, and he posts collections of different famous African-Americans who have achieved many great things. But yet you would have stuff like The Shade Room or like our hip hop that be getting all this attention. And I think it is our black excellence is overshadowed by what the media portrays about us. And sometimes, unfortunately, it's how some of us portray ourselves. And I do think in a way that we could trace this back to maybe like the 80s or the late 90s or maybe even further back, because you always had black people who used like art or media as a way to resist. In the 1960s, you had a black arts movement, and you had the rise of this of being like Afrocentric, and you know you had your Black Panthers and different things like that. But then you get to the 70s and you see like the war on drugs that really damaged the image of the African American community, and particularly because they were associating some of our leaders with the drugs and with cocaine and things like that. And none of these leaders really did any of those drugs. Like it's a known thing that the government like associated them with these issues to dissolve to dissolve these movements, because I mean people probably didn't know that the Black Panther Party did have coalitions with like Spanish people or Asian people, because we were really going to try to, you know, have a movement and achieve equality. And so then we have the 70s come around, you have like the Black exploitation film era that portrayed Black people as like pimps, zombies, slaves, all of that. And it was no balance in between the representation of African Americans. And then like you did have movies like The Wiz that came out, but I mean the mainstream media, what you saw was as African Americans as these pimps. And then in the 80s, you had shows like The Cosby Show, A Different World, and like the rise of almost like this Black excellence persona and the continuation of Black respectability politics, as we would call it. But then in the 90s, you had your rise of like the rise of hip hop and the rise of gangster rap. And I think that sometimes our culture has become so violent. We have been conditioned to think that certain images and certain personas are okay when they're not. So I feel like the images of African Americans in the media, it's not that many images. Like it's quite disheartening looking at some of the shows that are on for African Americans, and you just see the same violence, sex, drugs, or if there are Black, if there's a Black person on the show, he's a minor character, and this person is this hyper-magical Black person who solves all the problems of the non-Black person, and you don't really get a storyline from them. So I do think African Americans, the way we are portrayed in media, is quite negative. I think we should have a wide variety of portrayals, because I'm not trying to be elitist or anything, you know. You can show Black people who may live in the inner city, but not everyone in the inner city do drugs or do bad things. You know what I mean? So I feel like there are a lot of misconceptions about Black people, you know.
That's a fact. Yeah,
and that's
you know,
a perfect segue to your question, Bobby.
Exactly. So, and this is basically the perfect segue. What is the biggest misconception of Black people?
The biggest misconception of Black people, well, Black men, basically the major misconception is that Black men are lazy. Black men are irresponsible.
Talk your talk.
It's basically every Black person is a hypersexualized Jim or Jane Crow. And Jane Crow is this woman who uses her body to get her way. Very angry, very loud, very boisterous. Just that we're ignorant and we're lazy and we contribute nothing to society but raising crime rates and the selling of drugs. So that's how Black people are being.
Yeah, that is the truth. The Jim and Jane Crows,
yes,
the drug dealers, the guys who drop high school dropouts and things like that. You know, that's what he was
essentially a Love and Hip Hop episode, basically.
A Love and Hip Hop episode? Yeah, that's another one.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly. Fighting and going
right.
All this stuff that I never see. So, and
people think that people
just,
that don't have Black friends, when they look at stuff like Love and Hip Hop and stuff like that, they would think music videos and stuff.
That's not true.
But they don't really have like Black friends they really hang out with enough.
Mm-hmm.
They don't really think that that's how we behave. That's just normal,
or
everyday average Black people's behavior. Like.
Right.
Yeah.
Or I see, like in my high school, I saw where the group of Black girls who were kind of fitting that stereotype, it would be white girls that would hang around them who would change the way they look, who would change the way they talk to fit in with that particular crew, because that's what they thought Black people and Black women were supposed, young black women were supposed to be like. And just the racial dynamics in my high school was very interesting, toxic, if I could put it to you simply.
Yeah. That's perfect, yeah. That is toxic.
Very toxic.
But white's been absorbing black culture. You know, they've been absorbing us for as long as I can remember. They take everything from us, but they're the ones that's making the profit, the money off of our culture, making the most money.
Yes. And you see that? Yes.
Yeah. We come out with Boys the Men. They come out with New Kids on the Block. They always do it.
Everything that we generate, like everything that we're great at, is like they own it. Like basketball,
right.
Football, they the owners of the teams.
Mm-hmm.
Hip hop, they own the music industry. Hollywood, they run Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
So you see black people making money, okay, well, LeBron James,
mm-hmm.
that's the greatest basketball player in the world. That's great, but guess what? Mm-hmm. All the players are black, but the owners are white.
These sports players.
So it's still like,
it's
still that plantation-like mentality if you think about it.
Definitely. And you saw that back in the day with musicians in places like the Cotton Club or the Plantation Club, where they would accept black performers, but then they wouldn't treat the black performers well, or they would
white people. That was a white people club. They wouldn't let blacks in there. Exactly. Well, wow. You know, it was just that was just another thing that's like mind boggling. You know, and all. Yeah.
And even with like inventors, people like Lewis Howard Latimer, who was like an inventor and he patented for a certain type of light or a lamp, I'm sorry. And it used like electric light with wire and it heated until it glows. And you see people like Thomas Edison suing him saying, he stole my idea and that's not even right, or Granville T. Wood. You know, you see this, and it's like, well, we're praising Thomas Edison, but he was stealing the ideas of African-Americans and bitches.
Right.
Like,
stealing our ideas and becoming bitch off it and getting it.
When you look it up in the history books, it's going to give him credit as being the person who originated, who created it, the creator, you know.
Yeah,
right.
The intellectual property. Person, you know,
mm-hmm.
the IP. That's another why we do need to learn law too, because this way we won't get beat. Look what happened to the rap industry, sports industry, like you just said, the whites own it. Stuff that we created, but they own it. We got to go work for. That's why a lot of guys are now, you know, getting distribution deals and not going to try to sign with a record label. But, you know, it's what, you know, because they don't want to get ripped off. Like these, you see all these great artists that we listen to and how they wind up broke and poor.
Right.
You know, so.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah. Disney did that with the man who wrote the song, The Lion Sleeps Tonight. Like they used his song without his family permission, and the family for a while didn't get royalties from the song, and they had to sue Disney, and they ended up getting millions of dollars for that. You know, but it was like, why would you think it would be okay for you to take someone's song to begin with? You know, and then the songwriter credited for the song isn't even the man who wrote the song. It's some group of white people. It's right.
They steal your stuff and get it patented, and and now it's their property, and the person that created it is sitting there looking, scratching his head. And struggling, still in the hood, you know?
Exactly.
So that's why we got to protect our stuff. Anytime you create, protect it as soon as possible. Legally, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Facts. So as we're winding down, right, just got just a few more questions for you, Deja. One of those questions is, and I think this is a very important question to ask a young black person such as yourself,
mm-hmm.
who is, you know, pursuing black excellence, definitely very proud of you.
Thank you.
What could black parents do to make their children feel acknowledged and understood? Because we see a lot of friction with black parents and their children,
mm-hmm.
and you know, you see like a lot of them, you know, a lot of children are growing up without their dads, and their moms is too busy trying to chase a man to pay them attention and spend family time because they want to, you know,
mm-hmm.
what I mean, when they go to the club, or they just too busy in their own world. You know what I mean?
Right.
So it's like, what do you feel as a young black woman yourself, right? What do you feel like parents could do to make their children feel acknowledged, understood, and heard?
Right. Well, I feel like particularly for like fathers and daughters and mothers and their sons and just the whole family in it, I think it would be nice if you just had like a day, like spend a day with your child and just really sit down, talk to them, see what they're thinking, how's school going, and even if outside of the school environment, even if you're just like, okay, baby, today is your day. What do you want to do with mommy? What do you want to do with daddy? Like, what can I do as a parent to, like, get to know my child better? That's what I would encourage you. Try to understand, like, what the child's feeling and where they're coming from and things like that. And also, I think it's important for parents to have these really open and transparent conversations with their children about different things that maybe not only things that are just going on in the world, but in their own household, you know. Of course, do it age appropriate. But just really try to spend as much quality time with your kid and just try to do things that they might be interested in and then show them something that you might be interested in. And then you could bond over something that you would never had expected, you know. Your kid may like a video game, and you may be like, well, I don't know about this video game. But if you try to understand him, and if we could try to understand our parents more, I think that would make more of a difference. And also, I would like to acknowledge, I think we need to acknowledge that parents are people too. Like, sometimes we just view them as like, oh, that's my mom, but your mom is still a woman, you know, your dad is still a man. And just understand that they were people and they still have feelings, and just try to think of how our actions impact them and vice versa. That's what I would recommend, Mike.
Wow, well said.
Very well said. Yes.
Well said, for sure. I definitely can't forget to touch on this, and I forgot to actually list this in our list of questions, but I just want to touch on womanism.
Mm-hmm.
I want you to, get into that a little bit. And for the people, it's a relatively new terminology, at least from my understanding that it is.
Mm-hmm.
And if you could just get into that a little bit about, you know, what is a womanist, you know what I mean? And what made you kind of get into it? You know what I mean? What kind of made you
mm-hmm.
get into being a womanist? And what's the difference from being a womanist and a feminist?
Womanist and a feminist.
For the listeners.
So Alice Walker, the author of The Color Purple, coined the term womanism in 1979 as a part of her short story, Coming Apart. And Alice Walker is just a very interesting figure because she's the reason why we know Zora Neale Hurston the way we do, because Zora Neale Hurston was on that spectrum of kind of like intersectionality, where it was like her age, her gender, her race, her religious beliefs, and her background kind of isolated her as a writer, because you had
black men who didn't accept her. And then you had the white world that didn't accept her because of her race, and black people didn't accept her because of misogyny. And so when you look at the idea of a womanist is a woman who can love women, sexually or non-sexually. And basically a womanist is a form of a feminist, but she fights against racism and sexism at the same time. Well, male can be womanist. Men can be womanist too. So they would fight against racism and sexism at the same time. And intersectionality is a term coined by Crenshaw, who is a black feminist, and who basically understood that the way a black woman or woman of color would navigate the world would be different from a white woman, because the white woman would have privilege or things like that. But for us, because of our gender, because of our background, and because of maybe our religion or nationality, we face the way we navigate society would be different from your standard white woman.
Wow. Well put. Well put. Well put. Well put. Well, with that said, I guess the final question is, you did a great job. The final question, if someone were to ask, who is Deja? Who is Deja? What does she stand for? How would you sum that up? Like, what would be your response to that? Who is Deja? Who is she right now? Who is she looking to become when it's all said and done?
Well, let's see. Deja is a child of God. I would say I would be a writer, a social activist, a giver. I would just say that I am sort of like a rebel and a revolutionary in my own right. So that's what I would say.
That was a lot, and that was awesome. But the first thing you said, Deja is a child of God. That was the first thing you said before you said revolutionist and all the other things you said. That was great. I totally respect
Thank
that.
You. Thank you.
That was dope. That was dope. Well, I think she deserved one more, Bobby.
Give her a round of applause. You really do.
Thank you.
She deserves one more. Deja, I want to thank you for joining us. This was an excellent discussion, as well as the discussion we had with your big sis, Kendra. Both of y'all did a great job.
Thank
you. Did a great job. Wow, I'm very proud of you and everything. The young woman that you've become, your goals, your aspirations, and, you know, just I encourage you to, you know, just keep pushing, because you're doing so wonderful and your future is so bright. It's so bright. I mean, a person that doesn't know anything about you can hear this one conversation and understand, you know, the bright young lady that you are and how much potential that you have, you know. So
thank you.
You're on the path to greatness, and this is definitely black excellence right here. You're hearing it. You're witnessing it right here, right now, in real time, here on this Real Talk Radio. Now, remember what I was telling you. For anybody that might have missed this discussion, friends, family, whoever, all you got to do is that same link I sent you, all you got to do is send them that link, and they can hear this show at any time. Nobody missed a thing. You know what I mean? This is a great discussion, and I think people need to hear it. You know what I mean? Because it's a great representation of who you are. You know what I mean? And how you feel about things.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it provides a lot of insight. And it's like you're acting as the voice of the young black youth. And that's something that we've been focusing on using our platform to display, because we're sick of our people always being stereotyped as like, you know, our women being stereotyped as thots and the men being stereotyped as dogs. And you know what I mean? Like we don't have no sense. You know what I mean?
Yes,
and
sir.
So we're looking to change that narrative. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And we have to
mm-hmm.
do things like use our platforms and our outlets and stuff to show people that, no, a lot of us do have common sense. That's not all of us. You know what
right.
I mean? That's just some of us.
I
100%
agree.
Right. And keep doing what
you know
you
what
do,
I mean?
Deja.
Yes.
You know why? Because somebody in your circle who knows you or is looking and seeing
mm-hmm.
what you do, and they probably want to do, you know, they want to do the things that you're doing. You're motivating somebody, you know, so
mm-hmm.
keep doing what you
yes,
do
sir.
For yourself, of course, but somebody is looking at you and say, you know what, I want to go that route too, you know?
Yes.
So,
yeah. You never
people,
know how many people you'll inspire.
Too.
Right. It could be some young people listening to this discussion right now,
right now
that you
mm-hmm.
might not ever meet that would be inspired just by hearing this discussion, just by hearing you. You know what I mean?
Yes. And thank you for creating a platform that we can do this on. Like, it's needed. Like, honestly.
That's right, Tay. Yeah. We need to do this more often. Instead of talking about, let's talk bringing up black excellence, people who's doing positive things in the black community. Well, I
mm-hmm.
like shows like this. I'd say we need to do a lot more of this.
Yes.
Well, this
I
is
agree.
Great.
Big facts. That's for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
Mm-hmm.
For sure. For sure. So, with that said, thank you again, Deja. For joining
Thank
us.
Thank you for having
here on
me.
It's Real Talk Radio. The pleasure is all ours. Trust me, trust me. This is great content that's going to be around forever. You know what I mean? After us. Like our children will be able to hear these discussions and know what we were and what we stood for. That's very important. You know?
Right.
That's right.
Yeah. And so with that said, we're going to say goodnight. Thank you for joining us here on It's Real
Thank
Talk
you
Radio.
For having
Stay
me.
Real.
It's pleasure.
For sure.
Pleasure.
Anytime, cuz. Anytime. Anytime.
Yeah.
So we're going to say goodnight to you, and we're going to close
goodnight.
Out. Good night.
Good night.
Good night,
such a great job.
Basically, that she was amazing.
Such a great job.
And right, she's the voice of the young women of now, young black women. That's doing it like her, and even the women, just the young black women, period. That's the positive voice of the positive side of the young black women right there, you know? And, you know,
sure.
people are already looking at the young women as, you know, dots, like, you know what I'm saying? Looking at the guys as dogs, and you know what I'm saying? So we need stuff like this to let them know. We do, you know? It's like,
sure.
whenever I see, like, positive things, when I see black men graduating from certain colleges, you know, you hardly see that. Like, you know, you may see, and the news never really puts it out there like that. You know, we have to do that. We have to push it and share it with our people on social media. You know what I mean? It's sad. Like, we got to push that because they just, like, downplay our positive stuff all the time. So we have to let people know. You know, we can't rely on somebody else. Another race of people to push what we're doing. We really can't. We have to just do it. You know, simple as that. So.
Plain and simple, yeah. Bobby. Plain and simple.
Plain and
sure.
simple.
So, like you said, man, we're going to do more of these discussions. We got your daughter coming up. You know, one of our
sure.
next shows, and again, that we're going to be talking black
more
excellence
black excellence.
Again.
There you go.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We closing out the year with black excellence, Bobby. We closing out the year with it, man.
Yeah, let's close it out the year with all black excellence, exactly. All the good.
Yeah.
Even though 2020 was just a
For
crazy
sure.
year. But yeah, well, we're gonna
yeah.
go
this
out.
Is our duty, man. This is our duty, man. This is something that this is just a duty that we have to fulfill. Like, you know what I mean? We got to do this.
Yes, sir.
You know what I mean?
You
can't be sitting here complaining about how oppressed we are and all of this, and that we ain't doing nothing. We ain't utilizing our platforms, and we ain't pulling strings, and we ain't doing the things that
Thank
we
you.
Can to help, you know what I mean? To
there
help show
go.
That we are better than this. You know what I mean? So...
Yeah,
it
use the
good
platform
to
show
like
that
this.
We are better than this. Yes,
yeah.
very good. So we are definitely better than this, and we can bring positivity into the atmosphere, into the universe.
Yeah, for sure. So what we got your daughter next week, right?
Yes, sir.
Week was a Shay, right? Shay.
Shay Taylor. Artist, rapper, USA sports figure. Yeah. So we got all that coming up.
Black Excellence with Shay Taylor. Coming next week, man. It's going down. We closing out December with a bang, man. We got a black female vice president. You know what I mean? We just had a black president for 8 years. We got a black female president coming in. You know what I mean? We got all this black excellence going on. We got, you know what I mean, black athletes, black actors, black activists, black everything. You know what I mean?
Paving the way.
Down, man.
Right.
We're here to represent.
Yeah, we're
going to
be paving the way.
Yes, sir.
Black excellence.
So make sure you catch us next Tuesday. Tabriel, Bobby G will be joined by Bobby's daughter, Shay Taylor. We're going to be talking more black excellence. You don't want to miss that show. It's going down 10 p.m. Eastern Time. It's Real Talk Radio. Tabriel, Bobby G, we out of here. We will see y'all next Tuesday. Peace.
Peace.